Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
These two guys have Minnesota sports flowing in their veins. Mackie and Judd on Score North and ScoreNorth.com.
Conduits of Trouble time with Zolgad and Star Tribune sports columnist extraordinaire, my buddy Chip Scoggins. Chipper, what's going on this Wednesday as we talk?
I love afternoon baseball, and I love modern baseball where Mitch Garver's leading off.
I know.
The line of construction is so foreign to what we grew up on in baseball, isn't it?
Well, and like Arise is the prototypical guy there.
Sure.
So like that looks normal. And then it's like, now we're going to try Mitch Garver. And it's like, huh? But yes, you're right. It is. If the people that were baseball fans, you know, in your days of watching the Braves on TBS, right?
Yeah.
Like if they were just transported from 1982 to now, they'd be like, what sport's this?
Well, it is funny because, like last year when Arise was hit, and you know that I think I wrote a column. Was like, well, this is, you know, he's like the ideal leadoff guy. When you just put him there, and they're like, why would you take Kepler out in the home run right off the bat? You know, it's just, and I understand that philosophy too. It's nice to be up 1-0 after one hitter, but it is interesting how just. Well, one, the line of construction, but also how many different lineups they have. Remember back in the Braves, you could almost name it.
Yes.
Before the game, I could tell you who's 1-9, how it was going to be, and it just rarely changed, right?
Yes.
And now there's just so much matchups and
yeah,
Murph, things they look at. Yeah,
Murph did not get a lot of Rocco's rest and recovery. Bob Horner did not get rest and recovery. Bob Watson.
Bob could have used it, yeah.
They didn't say, Bob, you know what? You're not going to play today. Why? Rest and recovery day for you, Bob Horner.
Yeah, it is amazing. I assume that stems from just all the different things Rocco went through as a player and just personal feelings about how it should be done that he's carried into the manager's role. But it's, you know, it's maddening sometimes, you know. I mean, obviously, he has a rhyme and reason for it, but he's going to put player health and player rest over anything else.
Yeah, and I think it's him, but I also think it's the approach too that sort of proves statistically how guys do with rest and
sure.
Like the studies that these teams do now in baseball is remarkable. All sports, but you know how much they think at least. That the studies show them what guys need as far as you know, sleep goes, as far as, you know, if you play five consecutive games as opposed to four or five, what that means. I mean, it's just a different world as far as processing information from the box score days, you know, where we get a bowl of cereal chip and pour some flakes and be like, oh, man, look at that guy went 3-for-4 last night.
So do you think, and I don't study everybody's roster day to day, is Rocco in the extreme end of that, or you think this is pretty much throughout baseball, the rest and recovery to this extreme?
I'm guessing that he might be at the extreme end, but I'm guessing that there are teams that are pretty close.
Yeah. Yeah, because, I mean, it seems like everybody, you know, there's trends that everybody follows, whether it's, you know, relievers or launch angle or whatever, you know. So I don't doubt that. You know, I'm sure this is probably the new age thing that's rest and recovery. I mean, we saw it in the NBA already, you know, I mean, it's something they've been doing for a while, but I do think the sleep and the rest has become a big part of pro sports.
Oh, it's
not
huge.
Not NFL, obviously, because you only have 16 games, but I think right. the other three for sure.
It's huge now. Yeah. So explain this, because he's going to be on July 1st, 41 years old. No. How is Nelson Cruz still so damn good? And like, there's no, but here's the weird thing, Chipper. I don't see a cliff. Like, I keep waiting for the cliff and just gradual signs, right? Not so he doesn't fall off the cliff, but I just keep waiting for, oh, you know, that, okay, that's a sign. And you don't see it.
No, I think it probably has to be genetics and also his work in the off season. I mean, we've seen the videos of how much he works in the off season, just working out and hours upon hours at the field and in the weight room. So I assume that's a big part of it, just how he takes care of his body. And I've heard of, you know, we've heard him on, talk about his diet. And so obviously he pours a lot into that, but I mean, every pro athlete works hard, right? We see, I mean, that's, so I think there's probably just, I mean, he's just a different guy, you know? I mean, you expect the bat speed to slow down or the timing or just your age start to catch up with you. And so far, I mean, like you say, he's going to be 41 this summer and it's, you see nothing. You see no deterioration, no decline at all.
I mean, he's Brady-like in that sense. He's, you know, because I, look, Ortiz was damn good till his last day playing, right?
Yeah,
but like he could barely get to first base. Like there were signs that, okay, he's still really, really good at the plate. And I'm not saying that Cruz is a speedster, but like you watch Cruz play and there's no, he's clearly limping to first base, right? I mean, there's none of that.
No, and do you, how much do you factor that he doesn't have to play a position too, Judd?
Oh, it's huge.
Care of possibly that too. I mean,
it's huge.
Yeah, granted, it's not like you're playing NFL when you're standing out in the first base or whatever. But it's, you know, it is more physical activity that you're not having to do. He's just hitting, you know, three or four times a game. So I assume that probably has some part of it too, maybe a small part. I don't know.
All right, here's a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I honestly, I say this with no bias, and I don't know how I feel. Byron Buxton, okay?
Yeah.
Like when you see the signs, when he's and like right now at the plate, he is dialed in. Like this is what we have been waiting for.
Yes.
But yet he already got yanked from the game on Sunday against the Brewers because he had the flu or something like that. The point being is he's missed time, and he's missed so much time that it's very hard. Well, like you feel foolish to get excited because there's always something that goes wrong. But that being said, where should we land with him? Because if he's healthy, Chip, if he can play, and we talked about this on Mackie and Judd, if he can play, let's say, between 130 and 150 games, I think he is a top three in baseball game changer.
Yeah.
Like he changes everything.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm writing a column on him for tomorrow for the opener. And so in just a week, the first week of the season, we've seen him miss – not be able to start one game and miss parts of two others, the Sunday one and yesterday. He came back and hit a home run. But we've also seen him hit the farthest home run in his career and the hardest hit ball of his career.
Yep.
And so now you're Derek Falvey and Thad Levine, and you have to give him a contract, which they began the process at spring training. Buxton, you know, acknowledged during spring training. So his agent met with him. What do you do?
That's what I'm asking you. Like, what do you do?
Well, it's funny. I mean, this is one of the trickiest ones I've seen because, you know, there's part of you that says, well, there's no salary cap in baseball, so who cares what you pay him? Okay. Did anybody bitch about Joe Mauer's contract? So, yes. Okay. That became the thing.
Yep.
And so you obviously want a return on your investment. And you're right, Judd. His ceiling is MVP caliber, right? I mean, when he's playing at his best, if he's healthy – now that he's added power to his game, I was looking at stats. I mean, those first 2 years, 15, 16, he was striking out 31% of the time. And that's come down to, I think, low 20s now. Obviously, he's hitting home runs and hitting the ball a lot harder. His line drive or hard hit ball percentage has jumped way up. And so he's found something at the plate. And so he's become an all-around player now. This is, like you said, this is what everyone envisioned, like, the power, the speed, the defense, everything. But how do you account for the injury history and just the risk that you have there when you're giving him a contract? It's tricky. I don't know what the answer is.
But and I'm just talking about, too, the excitement about if this guy can play, the ultimate difference that he makes on the base paths with his power now in the outfield. Like, there's just so many things that this guy brings to a game that can change the outlook almost by himself at times.
That it could
be incredible, but you feel stupid being excited, Chip, because, you know, we've been excited before and there's always something.
Well, I just think, you know, going in that there's going to be points where it's going to be stoppage, right? I mean, it's going to be, I think it's just at this point, it's become so frequent that you just expect it, you know? So I think it's, you appreciate it for what you're watching. Cause I mean, you said 140 games. Boy, if he plays 140, they would, you know, they're just so much different as a team when he's in there. You know, he makes them infinitely better with his, you know, just everything, defense, running the bases. So, he's one of the game's most dynamic players right now, I would think.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And so, I think it's fair to get excited and fun to watch him, but you also know, okay, there's probably a pretty good chance that there's an injury right around the corner, too.
That's the problem. Wolves, D'Lo's back. But here's my assessment to you. He's back, and that's great. And hopefully now we get a chance to see what he looks like playing beside Cat for an extended period of time, because I think they're now, after beating Sacramento, I think those two now together since he was obtained from Golden State in that trade are at six games played together, which is remarkably low. But here's my take. I really believe this, too. I believe that if the Wolves are going to, in the next couple of years, achieve the success that we hope that they can, that this is going to be way more of the Cat and Ant show, and D'Lo might be part of it, and he might play a role, but I really think for a kid that's 19 and brings what Ant does, not consistently yet, but also on and off the court, that this is going to be Cat and Ant as your 1-2, and D'Angelo can play an important role and a supporting role, but I don't think this is going to be the Cat and D'Lo show.
No, and I wrote that a couple weeks ago when it came back that, you know, you're going to be adding Russell and Beasley, too, to the mix. And you had, at the time, those four players, Towns, Edwards, Russell, Beasley, those four players ranked in the top 33 in the NBA in shots per game. And so it's like, okay, no, something has to give here. You know, that's not going to work. Somebody's got to take a step back and have a secondary role. And my point was like, sorry, but I wouldn't sacrifice anything over Edwards' development at this point.
Correct.
Like his upside is so much higher than those other two. And you need to be all in on, and this is, he had a couple of bad games really right back to back. And I was like, and that's part of it. You have to let him, you can't get discouraged by his bad games because there's going to be those. You need to be encouraged and say, okay, but look when he plays really well, what you have. And so I agree. And you know, the thing is okay, is Russell going to be okay with that and his salary and where, how he views himself and ego? And the other thing I look at, Judd, is if they somehow, the 40% land one of those top three picks, I'm sorry, I'm taking either Jalen Suggs or Cade Cunningham, and I'm taking a point guard and trying to move Russell at that point.
Because
if you were to get one of those two point guards and you say, okay, I got that point guard with Anthony Edwards and Towns, that's your three. That's your three guys right there. And so, I mean, they obviously want to see how this experiment looks, but it was interesting. We had that. Oh, it was after the trade deadline when I wrote that, the day of the trade deadline, they did nothing. And, Gerson said, you know, we didn't make any trades because we need to see this nucleus together. We haven't even seen our best two players together. And he didn't name them, but it was obvious what he was talking about. And so I'm like, well, I don't think Gerson is there yet at all. I think he still considers this the Towns and D'Lo thing, and then everyone else fits in. And I don't know. I mean, long term, I think I would, especially if you get that top three pick, I would be looking for a new point guard.
What intrigues me about Ant, Chip, is this. He's a kid still. I mean, he is a kid. He has a factor to him that is very tough to have. And I know it's a non-statistical thing as well, but the way that teammates gravitate towards him and like these zooms where he goes on with, you know, Cat or with Beasley.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how impressed I am for a kid that age to do that. And for adults basically to gravitate towards him. That's a factor that you can't just say you have. Like, you can't go into a room, and we've talked about this before. You know, you can't go into a locker room and say, I'm Aunt Edwards, and you're all going to love me, and we're all going to do, and here's what we're going to do. Guys will say, get lost. You either have it or you don't, and a lot of people don't, and that's absolutely fine. But that's what intrigues me about him is he's got a personality and a package about him. On and off the court that a lot of Timberwolves have not had. And you know what? In fairness, because he's a very good player, but Cat doesn't have that.
Yeah. Well, he has the confidence of just, you know, endless supply, obviously, the way he plays and carries himself. But it's also like that youthful joy. Like he, you know, you can tell just how much fun he has playing. And that organization has lost so much and had so much nonsense go on. That you could see where it just drained the joy right out of you know, when you just constantly lose and you feel hopeless. And then, you know, along comes this rookie who just, you know, carefree and loves to play and has this magnetic personality where even Rubio's talking about, you know, some of the veterans that have been around and seen a lot talking about how unique he is and how fun he is to be around. So I agree. I mean, And then you match that up with, obviously, he's got tremendous skill and upside. That's the kind of guy you want to build around because you feel like he's going to really work hard to try to be great. Now, you know, he's been awful defensively. He's got to learn that part of the game.
Sure.
Offensively, you know, he needs to shoot more efficient and become a better outside shooter, but he can score. Defensively, he's got a lot of work to do. But I think he has the drive to be great, you know. And wants to be great. And so that's the kind of guy you want to build around. I just see so much higher upside with him than you do, you know, with Russell or Beasley or whatever. So, him and Cat, I mean, we've seen when those two get, I mean, I Gerson said it's not sustainable, and it's obviously true probably, but when they both scored 40 at Phoenix that night, that was something else. You know, I mean, you're talking about one of the better teams in the NBA, and did Buxton just come up hobbling a little bit there, running the bases?
I did not see that.
I saw him run up, but it looked like he just didn't really leg it out too much. I think he's okay, though. I didn't notice him come up hobbling necessarily.
To our point, he just kind of pulled up slow as he got the first base.
Yeah.
Probably he was out by a long way.
Yeah, I just got a note from somebody who saw the same thing. Jake DePew just said the same thing via text. He saw him run slowly. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
well, we will monitor. It's a podcast, so we'll know more. But, that's not good.
But, yeah, I would totally build – I mean, Townsend – my 1 and 1A would be Townsend Edwards at this point, but I don't think the organization is there. And I don't think they will know that until they get to the end of this year and have more games with Russell in there to know kind of which way they go.
Chip Scoggins, you moved here when? 2000?
Yeah, January of 2000, January 1.
Okay. If a year into your time here, I had come to you and told you in 2021, Chip Scoggins, the final fours, plural, not just one, the final fours are going to have two players from in the men's and women's from the state of Minnesota, who are going to be absolutely critical pieces of teams, and I mean star-like talent, in 2001, what would you have told me?
Yeah, I would say very unlikely. Now, you know, we had, you know, when I got here, Jake Sullivan was, you know, a big-time player, went to Iowa State, and Adam Boone was going to North Carolina. So, you know, he was a nationally ranked guy. I think he had North Carolina and Duke, and was it Horvath that was going to Duke a couple, a year later, Nick Horvath? So, I mean, we had we didn't have like the Tyus Jones or the Jalen Suggs or Paige Beckers, you know, number one players in the class in the entire nation, the Chet Holmgrens. We didn't have that. And it, but it is amazing how much this state has really just developed and multiplied in terms of the number of great basketball players that are coming out of here. I mean, it is staggering. And you're talking about two decades.
Yep.
And it really goes back to, I guess it's been about, was it 2017? Like 17 or 18, I did a project just on how basketball has changed in this state and become the state of basketball. And it, we were just so far behind the curve on AAU basketball. And I think I told you a story where Jim Pete, you know, he went to McDonald's All-American game and he knew nobody. They didn't know him because he wasn't allowed to compete in AAU stuff back then. And then the state high school league changed the rules and allowed kids to play in events in the summer outside of the state. And so the floodgates opened for AAU. And I mean, you just look at it now. I mean, it's crazy how good basketball is in the state. And, you know, you had Jalen doing that and hit a shot that's going to be iconic along with, you know, the Christian Laettner shot. And, I mean, Paige Beckers basically won every Player of the Year award as a freshman.
Yep.
First time that's ever happened. And now, you know, Chet Holmgren's the number one player. And I assume he's going to go to Gonzaga. That seems to be the general consensus by the recruiting guys. So it's and the pipeline keeps coming. There's, I mean, really good juniors in the state too, led by Trey Holloman. I mean, we're going to have a number of high Division I players come out here next year again.
That Sugg shot and that game was absolutely fantastic. I mean, there are not, I'd say in the men's game, no, there are not exactly a plethora of great college games. That mm-hmm. game was fantastic.
Yeah, that was one of the better ones you're going to see in a long time. And the shot was great, obviously. But to me, the more impressive one was the block in that bounce pass. It was, you know, I think 4 minutes left, and he gets the block at the rim from behind, chases down the ball in the loose ball in the corner, takes two or three dribbles, and off the bounce, throws a bounce pass full length baseball court through defenders with some spin on to a guy for a dunk. I mean, that is as good a sequence as you're going to see in basketball, and just high level, both those things. You know, for a guard to be able to do that was incredible. But, yeah, I mean, it's funny. I mean, I wrote a column on Jalen when he was a junior year. I went and saw him play, and he was talking about, think about this, Judd. At the time, he had basketball offers from Kansas and Gonzaga and football offers from Ohio State and Georgia. And the Duke coaches basketball coaches were calling him all the time, and Nick Saban was calling him. And he went down and visited Nick Saban. And it's like, think about that.
Wow.
Athletes could say that. But at the time, like, this is when he was a junior. And I wrote, he's like, yeah, this guy looks like a one-and-done type player. He's that physically different skill-wise and just athleticism than everybody he's playing in high school. That, you know, because he had talked about, yeah, maybe I want to play. I wouldn't mind playing both football and basketball in college. And that'd be kind of cool to see if he could pull it off. But obviously, when you're a one and done and you're going to make millions, I mean, the choice is pretty obvious.
Top pick, do you think?
I think Cunningham probably still goes one. He's just, I mean, he's terrific too. I mean, he's dynamite talent. So I think he probably still goes one. I think Jalen, you know, it depends on how the order goes and what they need. But two is probably Mobley, right, from USC. And then I would say Jalen, probably. I think he's at worst the number three pick, you know, and it's interesting because let's say the NBA gets rid of the one and done, which I think they're going to do, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Does Jalen, is he a top three pick coming out of high school? Did he benefit from going to play at Gonzaga a year in terms of his draft status?
I would
argue yes.
Yeah, I would agree with you.
I think yes. You know, he could have gone to the G League and made, you know, a couple hundred thousand dollars. I don't know what those guys get paid, but assume it's a couple hundred thousand. Would he have been the third pick if he had done that? I don't know. I mean, so, you know, I think there is sometimes when you play at those high level and you get to develop and play against really good competition in college, I think there is some benefit for that you can actually improve your, you know, kind of your draft stock.
No, that's true. And I'll be curious to see this G League thing, Chip, where this goes, if more kids start to choose that as an outlet for a year as opposed to college. But I would guess if college, I don't know. If I could get paid and play in a high league, I think that's where we're going, which is why I'm very curious to see what college basketball does to remain financially competitive.
Yeah. What is there, like two or three guys? Was it Jalen Green? Is that the kid's name that's doing it? I think there's two or three guys doing it this year that, you know, are spending a year there. And
Holmgren talked about it, right? He's talked about going to the G League.
And I think there's rumors that Jalen might consider it too. I think if you're one of those players, if you're a top 10 player, I think you probably have to look at it, right? I mean, if they're going to pay you $300,000 to play a year of basketball.
And I don't have to go to classes. I don't have to worry about anything. Yeah, I just don't see. And look, college sports, you know, especially obviously football and basketball, they make so much money on the backs of these kids, and they're a professional entity. Like, they're on national TV. Everything about them screams professional. And for you to have to, you know, go to school, which, one, you're not in school to go to school.
For basically a semester.
Yeah, and then
a semester and a half,
And to get paid under the table, if you do get paid, you know, if you could give me a competitive league that's going to pay me, like you said, you know, $250 or something like that, I'm probably going to take that.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see if this NIL legislation, because it's going to happen. It's going to go through, either NCAA will do it or Congress will make them. They'll be compelled to do it. How that changes it. Because so when I did that big Paige Beckers story when I was down at the Final Four last week, so Paige Beckers, Joe, when you combine her Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok accounts, she has over 1 million followers, which is crazy, right? Yeah. I mean, she has 750,000 on Instagram. So the name, image, and likeness is the big thing, and that's kind of what I've always supported, that, you know, if a local car dealership wants Tanner Morgan or Gable Stevenson or whoever to be on a billboard or be in a local TV commercial, you know, they would get paid for it. They could do it. But the kind of the new frontier, I don't know if it's new, but new to me because I'm old, but that these companies see huge advertising potential off social media. And I talked to this guy who owns a company, he started it. It's called Open Doors.
Okay.
And they help athletes who have basically monetize their brand on social media. And I talked to the guy, and they have this calculation. They study endorsements over 10-year periods, and so they can assign a value to based on how many followers you have. And I guess, you know, because you see these influencers or whatever, and it's just based off. I mean, we see it with Kirk Cousins every now and again. He'll just drop in hey, I had a great sleep last night on my sleep number, and here's what it was. And you're like, that's odd.
Yep, see that a lot.
He's making a lot of money off that. Mm-hmm. And so this Open Doors guy, he said he punched in Paige Beckers, her Twitter and her Instagram. And it was, you know, 750,000-800,000 followers. And he said, you know, I'll give you a hypothetical. If Wilson Basketball wants Paige Beckers to, you know, do one tweet and one Instagram saying, hey, I use Wilson Basketball, you should do it, whatever, that she should, he punched it into his little calculation. He said, that should be worth $23,892. I'm like, what? He's like, no, I mean, people think that's phony and people roll their eyes, but I'm telling you, that's what the value is for these athletes.
Yeah.
And so I think once that passes, that NIL legislation, I think I'm not saying it's going to make, you know, people just skip the NBA doing a one, and, you know, not doing a one and done because you can make more money there, but I think it is going to be progress in the right direction where athletes should be able to make money off their popularity.
And if if you're a star or you're good, like Paige is, then you should make more. Like, there's no fair here. Like, if I am the third point guard at UConn and I play with Paige and she can make X amount, like you just talked about, and I can't, that shouldn't be a line in the sand of, well, that's not fair there. I mean, it's all a business. And there have been and there are plenty of adults who have benefited for a long time. So if five kids can, they should.
And that's what, I know the always come back is like, hey, you know, these guys get full ride scholarships, which not every athlete does, but yes, the ones that would be getting those primarily would do. But But to me, that's just not, that argument doesn't hold weight anymore. And this is coming from somebody who pays one college tuition. I'm going to have two next year. And I get it. I mean, here's the thing. If a local company, my daughter's a sophomore in college, if a local company wanted her to be in a commercial, she could do it and get paid for it. If that same local company wanted a Kansas basketball player to be in a commercial, they couldn't.
Yep.
Well, why is that fair?
Because they made the rules, and the rules are silly. I mean, and that's the thing about it is, and what drives you crazy is, at least in Division I, it is a professional sport. So
yeah, yeah.
So, like, let's get over this whole thing. I mean, this is always, at the end of the day, this has always been about the most powerful adults pocketing as much as they possibly can.
Yes.
And that's where we got to call BS.
Yeah, and hiding behind amateurism.
Yeah.
Like that's going to ruin. That's my thing. It's like, okay, Gable Stevenson, great personality, unbelievable wrestler. He's going to be in the Olympics for the Gophers. If he were to get a couple of endorsement deals,
right?
Do you think the entire college sports empire is going to fall to ashes?
Of course
not. No one's going
to
care.
But the thing about it, Chip, to me, is look at this, okay? And the NC2A is guilty of this at every turn. The more pious that your people act, the more that they're trying to hide what they're doing.
Yes.
And the NC2A is incredibly pious. Like, you know, like, don't question what we're doing. Okay, you're hiding something. It would be different if they would open their books and say, we are, you know what, you think we're rich, we're taking a bath, but you're not.
Well, and the thing that drives me crazy is just this, you know, it's amateur sports and they're doing it for the, you know, that's what makes it so great is amateur sports. Meanwhile, the NCAA deal with CBS and Turner for the basketball term isn't like $18 billion.
Yes. Oh, yeah. No, it's total BS.
Like, come on, man.
Yep.
I mean, let's, it's amateurism when it's convenient so they can avoid letting athletes have a slice of the pie. And, you know, meanwhile, ADs are making, you know, $1 million a year and coaches are making $8 million. Football coaches are making $8 million. I mean, so everybody can pocket from it, but the workforce, for lack of a better word, you know. I will say this. I don't know how you would – people say you should pay them salary. I don't know how that would work. I honestly don't.
Well, I think that I think the starting point, in fairness, should be if you're a star and you can do what you just talked about, okay?
Yeah.
If you can benefit from who you are, they can't stop you.
That's where it should be.
But I don't. But I'm and you know what? If you love sports, like if you are a backup forward on the Gophers, okay, and you're a basketball player and you're pretty good, but nobody really cares, but you love to play and you get a scholarship. And that's it. That's fine too. Like we're way too the people that run this hide beat behind. Well, we can't pay everybody, which I agree with. I don't even care about that. But if I'm a superstar and I'm going to come play for you, and I'm going to, you know, Paige Beckers is making UConn money, and she's making the NC2A a lot. She should benefit. And if you tell me that's not fair, I'm going to tell you I don't care. It's not fair. That's the difference.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's like, I mean, who determines what fair is?
A bunch of people who are trying to keep as much of the income as they possibly can.
That's what it is, yeah. And just, I mean, Mark Emmert, the NCAA president, just his leadership has been so weak, and you know.
Well, and they got, you know, the women's basketball stuff. They got caught.
Yeah,
and then they're like, this shouldn't have.
Ted, how did they know that was going to come out?
Because they think you're stupid. They think we're stupid, and they don't understand. They don't get that kids today have changed. And that and that the kids are not going to abide by their, you know, I'm sure they had probably something that said, you know, no pictures or something, right? Like they thought that's going to protect us. What they don't get, though, is that kids today are far more empowered and they should be good for them. And so they got caught and then they try and act like, well, this was oversight. You know, we're sorry. You're not sorry. You tried to do this on the cheap because you're trying to pocket as much as you can. Like, I would far prefer that. Emmert and his cronies just come out and say, look, here's the deal. We are as greedy as greed can be. And we're sort of crooked too, but we don't care. We are going home rich. That would make way more. I would say, oh, okay, cool.
At least you're being honest about it. I mean, to come back and say, the space wasn't big enough when it was, or
of course
this was just temporary. No, it wasn't. This is what you were given, and you just either thought people wouldn't notice or people wouldn't care, and both are bad. But you're right. Yeah, it's just, I mean, the greed there is, it's absurd, and I don't know. I think, you know, the NIL is going to happen, although they're dragging their feet. I don't know why they're waiting so long. And I'm sure there's going to be loopholes. I was talking to somebody with the school, and they're like, okay, let's say you're a Nike, and I don't know if it'll happen, but, you know, let's say your school has a contract with Nike, but Adidas, you know, what if Adidas wanted Paige Beckers to, you know, do a commercial or be a, you know, a spokesperson? Would she be allowed to if her school was Nike? Yeah, probably not, but I don't know. I mean, that's.
But then does she get a cut from the contract with Nike? Like that's what I, that's where you would need to come to a compromise.
That, yeah, that's where it could get, like, you know, complicated, because I think they're going to have all these, you know, they're going to have all these provisions in there to try to screw over the athletes.
Of course they are. It's how they work.
But my guess is that's why they're dragging their feet, but it's going to happen. I mean, I think it will happen, you know, sometime in the next 12 months, and it should. I mean, it's just long overdue.
Oh yeah. Absolutely. All right, Chipper, thanks much. I'll talk to you next week, okay?
All right, brother. We'll
see you. All right, take care. Bye.
Whether it's Baker's Simple Truth Turkey or mac and cheese with Murray's English Cheddar or pie made with fresh Cosmic Crisp apples, there are many dishes we look forward to sharing during the holidays. And Baker's has all the fresh ingredients you need to turn today's holidays into tomorrow's memories. Baker's, fresh for everyone.
Get more ways to save at the Buy 5 or More Save $1 Each sale. Just buy 5 or more participating items and save $1 each with card. Baker's, fresh for everyone.
This holiday season, Peloton's got a gift for you. Right now, get up to $200 off accessories with the purchase of a Peloton Tread. Accessories like non-slip grip resistance bands, a heart rate monitor, yoga blocks, and more. Take your workout to the next level with Peloton, motivation that moves you. Hurry, this limited time offer ends December 25th. Visit onepeloton.com to learn more. All access membership separate. Offer ends December 25th. Cannot be combined with other offers. See additional terms at onepeloton.com.